Faith McFarland says it won't take massive change to solve the need for affordable housing in Fredericton. A few simple tweaks will do, such as introducing inclusionary zoning, where a certain percentage of new developments must be set aside for low-income housing, or being creative with the rules for granny suites and church property to meet housing needs. Ms. McFarland is coordinator of Fredericton's Community Action Group on Homelessness, and she is part of a group of people working on a list of solutions to affordable housing problems in the city. Now, that report goes to the city on June the 12th. Faith McFarland joins us now on the line from Moncton, where she is attending the New Brunswick Homelessness Summit today. Good morning, Ms. McFarland. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning, Terry.
Yesterday on the program, Mayor Mike O'Brien gave us the broad strokes of the city's upcoming housing strategy. And basically, if I can just summarize it, he's saying that there's going to be a massive public fundraising campaign involving the business and faith communities, and they're going to raise money in a unique way, I believe was the way he put it, to build affordable housing on surplus city property, and that those buildings will be made possible by changing some zoning rules to accommodate. Is that the kind of strategy you're looking at?
Definitely. In terms of looking at multiple prongs and solving the solution and putting some suggestions forward, really, though, the campaign or the collective work that everybody's been looking into is really around the question of how the municipality or people in our city could support the multi-year plan to end homelessness. So that's a really specific aspect of that, looking at chronic and episodic homelessness initially. So real questions around the entire, like, housing continuum and affordability will have to be done in the future. But some of the ideas and some of the work that's already begun has been looking at ways that we can use existing government programs, but also leverage some good community support financially. And it's already starting to take some momentum and get going, and using that to hopefully create about 40 units of permanent supportive housing or Housing First here in our city to support the road home.
So 40 units, is that, are we talking 40 buildings or 40 apartments?
No, just 40 unique individual apartments, yeah. And so the work that we focused on in terms of the task force is really looking at supporting the goals of the multi-year plan to end homelessness, which really starts with chronic episodic homelessness, and then working outwards from that in terms of looking at the entire spectrum of affordability. But even just to do that, I mean, it takes some changes in terms of some of the regulatory systems we have and looking at how do you incentivize this system so there'll be really good trickle-down effects in terms of looking at the overall affordability.
How much do you know about this public fundraising campaign involving the business and faith communities?
A bit about it. Like, it's sort of a neat, it's sort of a neat initiative. It's something that's pretty rare in Canada. It's something that's called the Housing First Fund, and it's a collaboration between two different philanthropic bodies in our community who've joined forces, and that's our United Way and our Community Foundation have signed a trust agreement to be able to sort of create a conduit. Like, a lot of times when people hear about Housing First as a way to respond to long-term persistent homelessness, like, well, that makes absolute sense, right, in terms of how the model works,
right,
is housing somebody first and then working on recovery, and they want to know how to help out. Some people want to help, you know, in terms of giving their skills and their time. Other people want to give financially. And so with the Housing First Fund, the model was is to provide a conduit, so for people who wanted to be able to make that contribution to do it. And even without having gone public yet on the model, it's already picked up a lot of momentum.
So these 40 units that you referred to a moment ago, they would be built with money raised by the Housing First Fund?
In part. It would raise probably about 35 to 40% of the capital cost for the creation of these units, and we would use that to leverage or use as bridge financing to look for additional provincial and federal funding. Like, as you know, in the last federal budget, there were some really strong announcements in terms of looking at the housing files. So there's renewed investment, like, federally and then provincially in terms of looking at housing as social infrastructure. So we really wanted to be able to make sure that our community was ahead of that in terms of preparation and that we'd be able to build as many of these units as we needed as close to mortgage-free as possible so that we'd be able to create a model where we could build in some of the support services we need for, you know, meeting the needs of some of these complex populations.
And the mayor said that these units would be built on surplus city land.
Well, that's up for debate, but one of the things when we're looking at strategies, like solving complex social problems takes some creativity, and a lot of times we think about the needs of people who have some complex barriers and challenges. A lot of that means they have to be close to amenity, close to bus routes, in walkable communities, in complete communities. And so finding land to make that happen is a challenge. And so using more of a creative lens is looking at what exists within our community that we have as a collective community asset around land, and seeing if there's ways we could repurpose that, and looking at some, you know, some higher density, but also just mixed communities. So that will be the decision ultimately of Fredericton City Council. But it's one suggestion that's been put forward in an analysis is a few properties that are out there that have been underutilized that may be able to be repurposed for this.
Now, the mayor mentioned that there might have to be some changes made to zoning regulations, to the zoning rules. What kind of zoning regulations and rules are getting in the way?
It varies from development to development. But across the board, when we look at affordable housing, one of the challenges quite often is there's a simple thing that in terms of what's in scope for a municipality would be parking requirements. We presently have in our own planning or in our own municipal plan provisions for density bonuses. If somebody is building affordably, they don't necessarily have to have a high ratio of parking per apartment. But it's not as progressive as what a lot of communities would use. So some of the amendments would be looking at more progressive treatment of parking variances for housing developments that are being used for Housing First or affordable housing. Other things are looking at setbacks, like there's a requirement in terms of distance from sidewalks so that we can, you know, play with those setbacks a little so that it's more in line maybe historically with the neighborhood, but also maximizes the footprint that's available on land. Some of our properties are zoned for certain usage, for instance, like church land. Already in our municipal plan is zoned for special care homes without them having to go in front of our PAC or the committee with council. If we were to look a little bit more creatively at that, why don't we broaden that scope so that they're able to build affordable housing without having to go for review? So things like these are some of the amendments that a city could take in terms of promoting affordability.
So could some of these 40 units that you referred to be constructed or established on existing church property?
Absolutely, yeah. And so that's what we're hoping to promote in terms of the work we've done over the past few months is strengthen some partnerships, potential partnerships that are out there. We see that we have existing land inside of our community that's owned by our faith-based community. There's land that's municipal, provincial, and crown. So church land is one amongst that sort of four-tier strategy.
What does inclusionary zoning mean?
Inclusionary zoning is a regulatory measure that is opposed to incentivizing affordable housing. Like if you incentivize affordable housing, it means that you're offering abatements on taxes or rebates on fees and things like this. When you're using a model like inclusionary zoning, it's more regulatory. Some cities have the capacity to be able to say when we're doing larger scale developments, that it's required that you would have a certain percentage of those set aside as affordable. And that's an inclusionary zoning law. And for instance, in Vancouver, that's something that's in play. As they've gone through their own housing crisis, they've tried to look at different tools that they could use to be able to ensure that their market doesn't outpace the ability of the community to pay for that. So here in our province, though, we don't have the capacity. Municipalities don't have the legal thrust to be able to use inclusionary zoning. It's something that's under our Municipal Planning Act or Local Government Act. So that's something that would need to be changed or tweaked provincially, even before a community like ours could start discussing using a tool like inclusionary zoning.
How did you arrive at the figure of 40 units? Is that sufficient to meet the demand?
No, there's a lot of different measures in place. Something that if people have a real interest in this is having a look on the website, www.roadhomefredericton.com. There on our main page is we have a multi-year plan to end homelessness in Fredericton. And inside of it, it includes a really detailed analysis of our housing market, some of our strengths and challenges, and also trends that impact homeless populations and people who are living in core housing needs. So those are people who are living outside of their means who are at risk of homelessness. When we last spoke, we spoke a little bit about our chronic and episodic population. when we look at those 40 units, we're building very specifically an asset in our community that we lack, and that would be supporting a piece and part of that population there. That would be purpose-built housing, not just affordable housing, but housing that we want to make sure has been set aside specifically for people who've been trapped in the homeless system for long periods of time. Outside of those 40 units, though, there's a whole list of other measures that we'd want to see brought about in our community to really turn the ship around.
And do you want to discuss some of those now?
Yeah, sure. It'd be great. Some of the things that we have is that it's really important in communities that have really moved the needle on homelessness. Like, I'm not speaking more broadly about housing affordability, but communities who do this well, and it is quite possible to reduce the duration of homelessness and to reduce the duration of it. And some of the measures they bring into place is looking at rapid rehousing. In our province, one of the tools that we use is affordable housing subsidies or rent subsidy. And that's something where a person will apply if you're at a certain income level to have their rent prorated to income. That waiting list is really long, and when you do qualify, it's always prorated against your income, and it can go on for years or months. What we're seeing in other communities, though, is you have situations where maybe the help or the assistance a person needs is something that's really time-limited and really short-lived, and so that's called rapid rehousing. And those are often things that are provided through your housing authority or your provincial or federal government through that type of subsidy program. And it ends up saving a lot of money in terms of looking at general housing infrastructure, and it means that we set aside our rent sup units and affordable housing for people with higher need, and then we use a lighter model for folks who have lower needs. So our estimated cost around that piece in terms of our price tag inside of the plan and estimated need would be about $470,000.
What response are you anticipating to from the city in terms of the mayor saying that surplus city property may be used to establish these units? What community response are you anticipating?
Well, I'm excited to see. Like, I do know we've met with city council in the past, and they offered their support or their endorsement of the plan to end homelessness back in the summer of 2015. And then we met again with the development committee in the fall of 2016. They said, listen, these are really valuable strategies for our community, and we obviously support it, but we don't know how the city can support it. What role does a municipality play? Because conventionally, municipalities in our province wouldn't really see their role working in social services or the construction of housing. So they're saying, outside of that, what is our role? And so when we went back and they said, why don't you take some time and review this? And so I'm optimistic that they're open to be able to look at these suggestions. And we're able to bring people from our city's own planning department, architects, people in the private sector and development, and to dig really deep in terms of looking at some solutions and figure out how can we do this in a way that really improves our community for everybody in building a complete community. So I think we have some good data to present to them about the overall benefits. I'm hoping they're receptive to it and that the broader community sees the benefit, that really housing affordability and homelessness impacts all of us, through our own quality of life. And by bringing up opportunities for all, we're improving our own personal opportunities.
Is there a chance the Housing First Fund, once it builds those 40 units initially, or helps build those 40 units initially, could it be providing money for more further units?
We're hopeful. Yeah, it's a really neat model. We're using 10% of all the funds that come into it are automatically, or 30% rather, are automatically locked into an endowment, so that it's creating revenues going forward in terms of preserving the legacy of the existing units. But any additional funds that come by way of this project, we'd want to reinvest into affordable housing. And when we meet that goal of building 40 permanent supportive housing or housing first units, the objective, if there's remaining funds, of course, is to grow and build affordable housing across the spectrum.
Sounds like you're pretty optimistic.
I am, actually. Like, a lot of great things have happened over the past 4 months. Like, working in the homelessness sector, sometimes it feels like it's really challenging, but to be honest, like, I've seen a lot of unusual suspects or different people come forward who want to be part of this, and seeing some changes that have happened at the federal and the provincial level, I think that we're at a time and place in Fredericton that we can actually, if we play our cards right as a community and get our ducks in a row, I think we can actually do this.
Nice to talk to you this morning. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Terry. It was nice talking with you.
Yeah, bye-bye. Faith McFarland is coordinator of Fredericton's Community Action Group on Homelessness. We reached her in Moncton this morning, where she's taking part in the New Brunswick Homelessness Summit.